Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Here's San Francisco and the incomparable forward, Rick Barry.
From behind the end line, they burn him again, and it's Barry.
And now Rick Barry, the league's leading scorer. What a superb basketball player he is.
Hi, everybody, and welcome back to Warriors 24. I'm Rick Barry, along with my co-host. Yes, the great Cyrus Satches. That's exactly right, the surf man himself. He is with us, ready to roll today. Hey, we have great news for you, Warriors fans. Obviously, they found a way to win. That was kind of encouraging to see that after the two disappointing losses that they had. But the only disappointing thing, Cyrus, to me is, as we talked about it with Charles Barkley last week and the things he said, they're worried about the offense. Hey, they scored plenty of points. They won the game, but they still gave up 120. And that's my big concern.
Give up
120 points every time, you got some problems.
Huge problems. And Rick, it's always a pleasure to do the show with you. And if the Warriors had lost that game, I feel like we would have gone to a very dark place with this week's episode. But that win was salvation for a lot of people. But you're right. 120 points a game is unacceptable. And is it fairly idiotic for anyone to criticize the Warriors' offense and not defense? Because we heard that a lot, right?
Yeah, we've been hearing that from all kinds of people. Oh, their offense, blah, blah, blah. No, it's not about the offense, folks. Yeah. It's about their defense. Their defense. I mean, they gave up 123 points in the victory. They scored 134. I mean, how can you be worried about somebody's offense if they could score 134 points, right?
Exactly,
I mean, seriously.
Right.
But the whole thing about it is the encouraging thing, if you're looking at it from an analytical standpoint, which we are always attempting to do.
Right.
You know, Steph didn't have a great three-point shooting game. I mean, he shot 40%. For him, that's good, but it's not a great shooting game for him from three-point range. And Russell did not have, D'Angelo didn't have a great game. He's only 3 for 11. So that's right. Not exactly great. But, you know, but the nice thing is he got 24 points. And as we talked about it, he's got to get 20 or more. Steph's got to get 20 or more. He wound up with 26. The other thing we threw into the equation, what did we say with Draymond? Draymond needs to get at least, you know, upright close to 15 points a game, double digits in rebounds. He had 17 rebounds, and he threw in a nice little triple-double with 10 assists. So you had a spectacular game from Draymond. That gave him a chance to do it. Then you needed to have some other people step forward. Poole, okay, 40% from the field. You know, nothing spectacular, but he was 3 for 5 from three. So that really helped them a lot. So the Warriors did what they have done over the last years. They shot 40% from three. So if they can shoot 40% from threes, you don't have to worry about their offense. They're going to be pretty darn good. And what we get concerned about is their defense. But they also had someone, and I don't know if he's going to continue to do it, because I know him from the days Damian Lee, when he played against my son Kenyon, played against him when he was back in the Colonial Conference. Then he went for his last year at Louisville. Mm-hmm. And he's a really nice player, undrafted and all. But he comes up with a huge game off the
bench.
You know, 23 points and 11 rebounds to go along with that. And he shot the ball exceptionally well. And again, 4 for 6 from threes. So that really helped the Warriors out tremendously, even with D'Angelo having an off day. So again, it's not about the offense, but then we need a few more people to come up with some stuff for him. I mean, Spellman gave 8 and Chris came up with 4, Pascal 8. But the thing is, they were outscored by the Pelicans bench. And so for the success of the Warriors in the last 5 seasons, the bench on many occasions did a great job of outscoring their opponents. Certainly, if they had a lead, if you can hold a lead, if you can increase the lead, sometimes they even came from behind. I don't know if this Warriors team right now has the manpower to be able to do that. And if they can't do that, they're going to be in trouble, even having games like this. Now, you know, maybe D'Angelo's going to shoot better and he'll have a bigger game. Steph can have one of his 35, 40-point games. But to expect Draymond to get triple-doubles all the time is also asking a lot. So there's still a lot of unknowns here with them, but it is encouraging to see them at least get that victory. Know they can win, especially doing it out on the road. So we'll see where it goes from there. Now, they got another game coming up that they should be able to win.
I hope so.
Yeah.
And Rick, I'm so glad they won that game, at least selfishly for us. It makes the team interesting, so people actually want to hear about the Warriors. I noticed two noticeable differences in that Pelicans game. One is Steve Kerr went to the small ball lineup, and I'd love to know your take on that. But he made an interesting comment as well after the game, and he said that small ball lineup with Draymond at the 5 would not work against every team in the NBA. It worked against the Pelicans. So I'm curious to know from your perspective, when that would work, when that wouldn't work. And would you agree that aggression, that hustle was a huge variable as well? They had that, and I didn't see that in the first two games.
Yeah, well, I'm not worried about the hustle. I'm worried about playing the intelligent defense from the team concept.
Right.
Being in the right position to stop the other team from getting a lot of easy shots, to be contesting shots, not give people wide open looks. You know, we're not expecting somebody to shut somebody down and not get any shots, but the thing is, there's a difference between shooting an open shot and shooting a contesting shot.
Right.
And also being able to take away, you know, not just running by a guy with the old Matador defense where you go running by the guy and then he's wide open and you're running down the court hoping you get an easy, you know, chippy basket on a missed shot or something. You got to close out. This is a thing in basketball that's taught from early on, at least it should be taught, that you run hard at the guy and you stop at least 6 feet from him, you get down and you shuffle up to him so that you make him think you're coming at him. And if you can delay him and take that shot, now you can close out on him. And sometimes you could even take away that good open look that he may have had. And so you have to be able to do that. And then you have to be cognizant of weak side defense. It should always be ball-man relationship on defense. Your man moves, you move. If the ball moves, you move. Keeping your man defensively in sight with where you know where the basketball is so that you can be in a position to help. And the further you are away from where the ball is, the further you drop off of your man so that you put yourself in a help position. So these are critical elements of playing team defense to make you an outstanding team that will help keep you in games when your offense is struggling.
Right.
Therefore, if you can do a good job with that and stop people from scoring 120 points and you're having a bad game offensively and you can hold them into the 90s or low hundreds, you're giving yourself a chance to still be competitive and maybe win some of those games where your offense is struggling. That's the whole philosophy behind playing good, tough team defense. This is the area that we're going to be examining very closely as the season progresses with this team. So far, it hasn't been encouraging.
It hasn't. You're absolutely right. After the game, we had some interesting comments from Stephen Curry and Draymond Green. Draymond has been dropping some F-bombs. He's been rather pessimistic following the first two games. And so there's been some media criticism that followed that. Do you want to hear some of their comments after the game?
Of course. We're always – listen, this is what I have. You were my producer when we worked at KNBR years ago.
Still am.
Right?
Still am, yeah.
And you still are a producer. And so I rely on you for all of the goodies and all the things that you can add to this equation. I'm excited because you came up with the good sound bites and our music and our intros into some of the special little features we're going to have. And so you pick it out. You throw it up there, we'll talk about it.
I love it. Well, here's a combination. This is a montage of Stephen Curry and Draymond Green. This was after the Pelicans win.
Everybody loves to label you when you're down and when you're losing. That's easy. It's easy to get on TV and say whatever you want. It's easy to just, you know, throw darts at a team that's trying to figure it out based on how much, you know, success we've had.
We still have a lot of improvement to do. You know, when I said we sucked last night, I see a lot of people blew it out of proportion. A lot of former players who ain't never let blew it out of proportion. We suck, and we're still not very good. But you know, I've actually known how to lead my entire life. So, you know, those that have never led shouldn't probably talk about leading.
If you want to get on, say whatever you want to say, fill that 24-hour news cycle, that's cool with us. We still gonna hoop and just play basketball.
Rick, right off the bat, who do you think Draymond Green was talking about in terms of former players criticizing his leadership?
Oh, he loves Charles, you know that. And Charles is opinionated about those kinds of things. And we talked about what he said to Clay, and we felt that he had reason to be pessimistic, and even Clay said that. But he was talking about the offense, like we said on the last show.
Right.
It's about the defense. And both of those guys gave great comments, great comments. Steph was right on. It is so easy, and people love to do it. Man, the people, especially in the media, the talking heads, love to knock people off that pedestal. And the Warriors have been on a very, very high, illustrious pedestal for 5 years. And people love to go and knock them off that pedestal.
Yep.
And so they're doomsdays. People, we're being, I think, honest about the evaluation of where the Warriors are right now.
And I would agree with that.
And Draymond, I think, would agree totally with what we said. He just said it. We still have a long way to go. And they're in the building process. Come on. They have 9 guys, 23 years and younger, from a team that had the experience they had, one of the greatest teams in the history of the NBA. What do you expect? I mean, you're not going to expect miracles. 9 guys.
And they're
15,
young.
9 under 23, young, yeah. 23 years of age. I mean, come on. Seriously. You only get better through experience.
You're absolutely right.
You can watch as much as you want. That's what I love some of these guys talking. Oh, we watched, we saw this, we saw that. I don't care how much you've watched it. I don't care how much you've analyzed it from watching it. Did you play it? Were you out there? Do you really understand the game the way you think you do? You don't. They may think that they do, but they don't. That's why I tell you one thing. I'm gonna shout from the rooftop. I
do
love Tim Legler.
Okay.
I think Tim Legler, Legler's Lab, Tim does such an incredible job of explaining the game because he understands the game. He's been there. He knows what it's about. And that's what I love. And that's why even I talked about the Drives Me Crazy segment last week, talking about the former players who are out there talking about all these lockdown defenders, which is a bunch of hogwash because you can't lock down a scorer. I mean, you just can't. And if a guy says that's the case, I said it last week, I'll say it again. Well, then obviously he got locked down because he wasn't a scorer.
Right. Yeah, Tim Legler, decent career, but as a media analyst, you are saying he's one of the best. That's who
I love his analysis of stuff. He points out things. He explains it so well. I've always loved what Tim does. He kind of reminds me like a Chris Collinsworth does in football.
Yes.
I saw Chris the other day at a charity event, the Bonacani Fund, Miami Project to Cure Paralysis, and just went up to him. And I've known Chris for years and just said, you know what, I just want to tell you, Chris, how much I enjoyed listening to you. And I tell you, a lot of times when I watch games, I'll record them, obviously, and put them on the DVR. And because I don't want to have to spend a lot of time, you know, listening to the things I don't care about. But a lot of times I don't really listen. I watch, I analyze. And a lot of times, depending who's doing it, I don't listen.
Right. Well, yeah, exactly. And speaking of listening and who you love, I cannot wait for the day when Draymond Green becomes a media professional. I mean, he's the obvious successor to Charles Barkley in that just candid, just, you know, no filter type broadcaster, former player. I have another question to ask you, Rick, and I'd love to get your feedback on this, because in my humble opinion, I sense a lot of bias from officials. You know, the Warriors had one of the greatest, if not the greatest, five-year run in NBA history, but I saw a lot of calls not going their way. I rarely, if ever, saw the type of favoritism that Michael Jordan got during his playing career. I don't know if you got that yourself when you were playing, given how dominant you were. Why do you think refs are so biased against the Warriors? And I bring this up because Steph Curry, two games ago, was issued a technical for hitting, I forgot the other player, but he basically hit him in the groin. And it was a totally incidental play. There was nothing malicious about it. Do you see my perspective on this, that there is some bias against the Warriors, or is this just me having fan bias?
You're a real big Warriors fan. So I think you have a little bias towards that. I don't really think any official could be that way, because it would show itself during the course of the season and what have you, and they would lose their job if they're going to do that. Although I will say, in the past, I will have say some things that some officials would have things against certain players, mm-hmm. and they would not give you the benefit of the doubt, and they would be looking to give you a tough time sometimes, because they are human beings and they're going to make mistakes, and they're going to sometimes have that bias, and sometimes they can't control it. And there's no question that they, at many occasions, will give the so-called superstar player an advantage in a call over a young player who's, you know, a rookie or just been in the league for a few years. He may get an advantage in that regard. I don't agree with it. I think the bottom line is, as an official, the rules are the rules. Call the game according to the rules. It makes no difference who commits the violation. You call it according to the rules. And you don't decide when you are going to call it strictly by the rules, or when you're going to bend them a little bit or let a little bit more go. Just call the game by the rules. And that's the biggest peeve that I had as a player. And I think most guys that I've talked to, and I'm around those guys a lot, especially doing the coaching in the Big Three, and guys like Gary Payton and George Gervin and Dr. J and Clyde Frazier. He's not coaching in the league, but Clyde Drexler, who's the commissioner. Yeah. So, and all those guys, when we talk about it, the thing is, you want consistency. So as a player, you want the game to be called the same way the entire 48 minutes. If you're going to call it close early, call it close late. Don't call it close early and let it go late, or vice versa. Just call it the same way every time, because players will adjust to what's being called.
Right. You want consistency. That's what you're looking for your officials.
Consistency.
I totally agree with you.
That's the thing that, again, well, we can get into drives me crazy. I'll have that on my list later. But anyway, you could. That's all you ask for. I think anything in life, you would like to have that. It's the same. I talked last week about the Warriors and the bench, that what I haven't seen yet is that consistency from the bench. Someone coming in and playing at a high level game after game after game. An Andre Iguodala, right? A Sean Livingston. Those kind of players who can come in and you know what you're going to get from them on a consistent basis. Now, sure, they're going to have those off nights, as we talked about, maybe 8 out of the 82 games or so. You're going to have a tough time. It's not going to work. But you can still do things to contribute to your team to justify your being on the court. So that's the kind of stuff that we need to see coming. So is a Damian Lee, after this great game that he had there, going to be able to duplicate that on a consistent basis? Maybe not as great a game as he had there where he got the 23 points. But if he can come in and you're going to, depending on your minutes, you're going to get 12 to 20 consistently, not come in sometimes and get 4 or none or 8. How do you judge it? And I'm going to get back to answering your question that you meant earlier, because I'm not that old that I forget those things.
You're not. No.
Is that you talked about, would it work for Steve Kerr with the small lineup? He knows he has a lineup that can be effective. It's a matter of seeing whether it's going to be effective on that particular night according to the matchups. That's a decision he has to make. But it never hurts to give it a try, because you can always pull back from it immediately if it's not working. But if it's working, now they have to make an adjustment to you. And that's the whole chess match situation in coaching. Try to do something, force the other team to have to, and if it's successful, force the other team to have to do something to adjust to it. If they're not doing it, you keep going with what you're doing. If they make an adjustment, well, then you make an adjustment. And that's kind of the way it is. It's that little give and take that has to take place. That's why it happens more in the playoffs when you're playing against the same team and you see the adjustments that coaches make, the changes they make. And during the season, you can certainly try it. He decided to try it against this team, and it worked, obviously, for them well. And so they were successful with it. Now, will it work all the time? Not necessarily. Probably not.
Yeah. And the rebounding numbers for Draymond, I thought, stuck out more than anything in terms of what they need from him. And again, I still don't understand why Steph Curry was issued a technical for an inadvertent swipe at another player's groin. And my whole issue with the ref bias and why I do believe it is, if you look at the free throw count on average for every Warriors game, the other team almost outnumbers the Warriors in terms of free throw attempts 2-1. And to me, that's an obvious measurable where you can kind of discern ref bias against the Warriors. It could also be the case of the Warriors' style of play simply doesn't draw fouls as much. And you would know better than I would in regards to that. But I do notice it. And this is the fans' perspective. And I do have bias. Again, I love the Warriors. But to me, it is noticeable. Damian Lee, by the way, I think he should be a full-time player. I thought the Warriors missed him dearly in the postseason last year, and he couldn't play because he was a two-way player. They brought him back again as a two-way player because he couldn't find a full-time contract anywhere else, a guaranteed contract. Side note, Damian Lee is Stephen Curry's brother-in-law. He's married to Stephen Curry's sister. Do you think he should be full-time? Do you agree with me?
Well, if he plays the way he played the last game, hell yeah. Yes.
Yes.
You get that kind of performance on a consistent basis for him. I mean, and it may very well be, you know, a guy coming off the bench to bring you that spark. You need to have that. You've got to have guys who can come in off the bench. That was one of the things I know in our championship in 75. Our bench was really good. We had a lot of guys. That's why Al went 10 deep. Mm. Because, you know, if one guy's not doing good, you bring somebody else in. You hope that he's going to be the guy getting it done. But it was our bench that saved us in game 7 in the finals against Chicago in the Western Conference. The bench. I was on the bench. I told you that story, sitting there forever because I sucked, justifiably so, on the bench. Clifford Ray. Clifford Ray's on the bench. George Johnson, our backup center, was in there. The guys were doing their job. The guys that were the bench players kept us in there. And again, it wasn't our offense. It was our defense.
Right.
The guys held Chicago scoreless for 7.5 minutes.
And what is defense going to help you, Rick? What does defense do, Rick?
Well, that's, you know, that they say defense wins championship. Yeah, but I also go along with that all the time. I mean, but it's more than that. Defense wins championships, but only if you have some offense to go along with it.
Fair enough.
You can't win only on your defense, not in the NBA.
And
you got to be able to score.
And you're right. Steph Curry, after that Thunder loss, even echoed what you've been preaching, which is that their offense is entirely dependent on their defense. Without that defense coming through, you don't have the turnovers, you don't have fast break points, and the offense is stagnant at that point. He was entirely echoing your point that the defense starts everything with this team.
Well, because of the way that they play, when they pick up the tempo, they bring it up to court quickly, they get all kinds of great opportunities, and they're all on the move, they're moving, they're passing, they're cutting, and it's not coming down and dribbling it up to court and try to go against the stacked defense and then trying to get something going where you can get that type of motion and activity. It's a lot easier to do that in transition when you're playing up tempo.
And Willie Cauley-Stein is going to be active for their next game. I'm very curious to see what he does. Rick, are you ready for NBT squared? Do you have something for us?
Well,
are we going to skip it this week?
The honest thing about it is that's nothing but the truth, folks. Nothing but the truth. NBT squared. We may have some stuff where we'll come out with something really serious. But I, you know what? I could pick up on that. Nothing but the truth. Okay, I'm going to come up. I have something I will talk about because we read into it, and this would fall into that category.
Do you want to hear Jack first? You want the truth?
Yeah, let's hear that. Let's do that.
NBT you want squared. Answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
My man Jack Nicholson, who I have the pleasure of knowing, you know, great Lakers fan, as everybody knows, in his movie A Few Good Men. That was Tom Cruise, by the way, who was on that. And I love that. And it really is true. I found that in my life that most people can't handle the truth. They ask you a question, but they really don't want to handle the truth. They don't want the truth. Because if you give them the truth, then they can't deal with it. Just like you said, you can't handle the truth.
Too much sensitivity in this world, Rick.
Well, there really is. I mean, come on. Just, you know, ask questions, get answers, accept them. You know, you don't have to agree with them. But don't get mad at everybody. Too much of that garbage going on anyway. But I'll bring up one thing as far as just to me the truth about it. The problem that happened, and this is a huge problem that has now come into existence for the NBA, the China situation, which took place with the general manager of the Rockets coming out, making a comment, had political overtones. I have said this for decades and decades, Cyrus, probably before you were born. Politics is bad enough in and of itself. So leave it by itself. Please don't involve sports in politics. And if we could do that, we're going to be so much better off. The situation that just took place here, same way. Anybody asked about that, what happened after it took place, said, look, I'm a basketball player. I'm not a politician. I'm not going to talk about politics and sports because the two of them don't go together. And as I said many times, think of all of the athletes who love this country, who were committed to wanting to have the golden opportunity, which is my biggest disappointment in my career, not getting to represent the United States in the Olympic Games, wearing that USA uniform. I got to do it one time in an exhibition game against the Russian team, the USSR team, the Russian team at that time. It was the Soviet Union. It wasn't just Russia. It was the Soviet Union.
Right, USSR. And why were you not on the team? Why were you never on the Olympic team?
Hey, I was lucky to even get invited to the trials. I was a leading scorer. I was one of the leading scorers in the country.
Right. So why weren't you on the actual team?
Because you know why? Because that was a pre-picked team. It was politics. Politics gotcha. Within sports, which again screws everything up. They knew who was going to be on that team, other than the team that was going to win the tournament that they had. They knew who was going to make it. I mean, to be honest with you, I mean, it was supposed to be based upon your performance in the trials as to whether or not you were going to get chosen. I only got picked because Gary Brads, the All-America player from Ohio State, backed out at the last minute. I got a call down in Miami. I got a call from the coach. It might have been the coach's wife, Doris. And she said, they just got a message that Gary Brad's backed out. They asked if you'd be willing to go to the trial. So I had to pack real quick, jump, get on a plane, and fly to go and do it. I said, of course. I mean, oh, my God, yes.
Right.
So I had a chance to go. I thought that I played very well in the trials, okay? I remember having to play in defense against one of the leading scorers on the AAU team that was playing, and then they had an armed services team that was playing. And I scored some points, played really good defense, got taken out of the game. And then this was like even the last game in St. John's. And then I sat on the bench and they just sat on the bench, never put me back in. What I found out really later on is that this team was pre-chosen. There's no question about it in my mind.
Gotcha.
They had the head coach is going to be Hank Iba. He was all about defense. There were two other guys that also should have made the team based upon their performance. A guy named Willie Morrell, who played at Kansas State. Willie played great in the trials, but he was an offensive player. And the other one, flashy, doing stuff, Wally Jones. Yeah. Wally Jones was great in the trials. And yet, neither one of those two guys or myself made the team. John Thompson, who eventually wound up being an Olympic coach for basketball.
Georgetown, yes.
Never got a chance to play because they wanted a seven-footer, and they used Mel Counts, who had played at Oregon, I think he played, I think it was at Oregon, or Oregon State, I forget which one. Anyway, he was there. He was the seven-footer. He got a chance to play. John was on my team. He didn't get a chance to play very much at all. And in fact, I don't know, maybe one day I'll tell the whole story about that one. I might save it for my book. He didn't get to play, and I didn't get to play. In fact, the fans were yelling for me. So I thought I had played well throughout the course of the trials. And so I'm walking off the court, and it was at St. John's where the game was, that last game. And I'm walking off the court, and one of the great former pro players and a coach that people probably will know the name if you're older, a guy by the name of Joe Lapchick, comes up to me and he says, "Young man, I'm going to tell you something." He said, "You're not going to make the Olympic team, but you're going to be a great pro basketball player." So I'm kind of like, ooh, you know, I'm saying, "Whoa, wait a second. I was excited about the last part of it. The first part, I'm saying, well, wait a second. I thought they were supposed to go and evaluate what was done. I thought I played pretty darn good." But he already knew. He knew at the end of that game that I wasn't going to be on that team. And so that's kind of what it was. They had a quota system. They had to take players from all the different divisions that were trying out instead of just taking the best freaking players.
And for the kids listening, in this time, only amateurs played in the Olympics.
Right.
The Dream Team changed that, but this is pre-1992. So all your years playing pro ball, where you're one of the best in the world, if not the best, there were no Olympics as an option for you. So
no, there wasn't. And I say that turned out to be my biggest disappointment, knowing how proud I was when I heard that national anthem played against that game against the USSR, played in Indianapolis. And I didn't even start in that game because they had all the Big Ten guys who were there that were on that team all started the game. And then we were behind. And then I got to come in off the bench, played really well. And I think we wound up winning. And I played very well in that game. And so, but just to have that USA on my chest, that's why I was so excited for my son, Canyon, to have a chance to represent the United States in the World Cup 3-on-3 championship. The only gold medal USA had never won to that point. Huh. And in June, he went over with his teammates and he got chosen as one of the four players to play. And they played really great basketball together, played the game so well, unselfish, moving, cutting, passing. And they went undefeated. And Canyon led the team in scoring four of the seven games and he got a gold medal. And I have a picture of him when the anthem was staying, you know, with his eyes closed. And it was just the greatest expression on his face. And I could just see for him to have experienced what I know I experienced, standing there watching that flag being raised. And in this case, he even closed his eyes in the picture that I have, to have that incredible memory for the rest of his life, to know he represented his country and won a gold medal. It's awesome.
That's incredible. And speaking of the truth, by the way, we're sticking with NBT squared and we're talking about NCAA hoops real quick. What's your take? I know we're shifting gears from China here. What's your take on the NCAA ruling? I think just yesterday that players can now earn money or they're on the verge. What are your thoughts on that?
Have you ever hear of Pandora's box?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, that sucker's getting opened right now.
So what's it going to lead to?
God only knows the craziness that's going to take place. How is that going to be monitored? Certainly the teams that have money and do stuff. Do you imagine what you could do at a big school with very wealthy supporters of your university's athletic programs, the things that you could offer for a kid to do something? I don't know if they're going to be able to allow to do that. I don't know all the particulars of it. Haven't read all the details of it.
Right.
Is that going to be part of it? You know, hey, come to our place. You know, hey, we're going to get you. You'll do an endorsement for, you know, this company or that company, and you'll be able to make money. Or is it a situation where if the university uses him in doing production and things of that nature, that he gets some percentage of the monies that are made when it's controlled by them? I don't know how that's going to work.
I think the premise right now is just that if you're a student athlete, you are allowed to earn your own income. I don't know if colleges or universities themselves are going to be paying the athletes, but at least now, if you're a star athlete in college,
well, it's not going to be the college or universities, Cyrus. It's going to be the alum.
The boosters, yes,
and the boosters.
But then you also have like Nike, for example, now Nike could pay that athlete, right?
Right. I mean, seriously, I mean, just think about it. The rich will get richer.
which is really
the way it works in life. I mean, that's just the way that it works. It's going to make it much more difficult for the schools that don't have that type of support and financial backing in order to be able to offer somebody. Can you, when you offer the scholarship, even bring that part of it up and saying what you could do for him? I don't know. That's why I'm saying it's a conundrum. It really, truly is. I do think, here's the thing, my wife and I talked about this yesterday, Lynn, and she was an administrator for the NCAA. I used to call her a spy for the NCAA before she became the head person, the executive director of assistant executive director of women's basketball for US for a number of years. She said, and I agree with her, she said, I think, and I've been a proponent of this myself, that if you're going to do that and you're going to provide money to these people to do that, and you start making all of this money and you do go on to become a professional basketball player or a professional athlete, whatever sport it may be, that you should have to pay back your scholarship.
Yeah. And that's actually been proposed as well, that I think one politician came out and said, if athletes are going to get paid, they need to rescind the scholarship. I mean, there's no point
in
giving them both.
Rescind it. No, you can give them the scholarship, but if they go on to become a professional. If they become a professional, you have to pay back the value of the scholarship.
Fair enough. We're running low on time here, Rick. Before we go, do you want to mention what drives you crazy? I even got the music. You want some music?
Oh, of course.
All right. You drive me crazy. All right, what drives you crazy, Rick? What's going on this week?
I want to hear from you. I want to hear from you first.
I'm going to go outside of sports for this week, and I'm going to say what drives me crazy are people, and I'm sure a lot of people feel the same way, and it might be redundant, but if you're in the fast lane and people are passing you, get out of the fast lane. That lane is designed for you to pass other people. It's not for you to just sit there and be comfortable and have a stack of cars lined up behind you. That's illegal on a side note. Get out of the fast lane. Simple. That's what drives me crazy. People are in the fast lane who do not drive fast.
Okay, I don't know if I'm going to let you get away with pulling stuff outside of sports. I mean, seriously.
All right, so,
if we could probably do an entire year of a show talking about those things that happen in real life. So you're going to have to come up with something better than that, Cyrus.
NBA officials for this week, going off what I said earlier, in my opinion, this is how I feel. I think NBA officials in general are biased against the Warriors. I don't know what the reason is for this. If you look at the free throw count of nearly every Warriors game, they're more times than not shooting less free throws than their opposition.
Cyrus, hold it.
What?
They're not going to the freaking basket. You don't get to the free throw line shooting 3-point shots all the time.
Well, okay, that's a fair point. But nonetheless, they're still shooting less free throws, and that drives me crazy.
Well, go to the basket. Get fouled.
But okay, and you're giving technical fouls to Steph Curry, who's supposed to be the golden boy of the NBA, just because he's running. When you run, your hands swing. If it accidentally hits someone in the nuts,
I agree
that's
with
not
you.
A technical foul.
I agree with you 100% on that. There's no doubt that if it's an inadvertent contact,
yes,
there should not be any type of a foul called. I mean, no, I agree with you. I mean,
so what drives you crazy, Rick?
So, well, there's so many things that drive me crazy, but one of the things of basketball, and so when you watch the next game, watch, this is something that you'll start looking for.
Okay.
What really drives me crazy, having coached a little bit myself, and I tried to make this a point, that if I'm coaching and I were to look up and I see you as a reserve player looking up in the stands to try to find a good looking girl if you're single. Hopefully you're only single doing that.
Yeah.
And not paying attention to what the heck the coach is saying in the huddle, because it has an impact on you. If he puts you in the game and you haven't listened to what he's just been telling the players that he wants to do, then what the hell good are you?
Is this a regular occurrence, Rick?
Oh, no. You just watch how many times when a timeout occurs.
Oh.
Watch the players on the periphery who are around the back, and especially the ones behind the coach. And see if they're really listening to what your coach is saying and paying attention to what's going on, as opposed to looking off, talking to one another. That really drives me crazy, because that is not fulfilling your duties as a member of this team to try to do as well as you can do and to be a part of what is trying to be accomplished through the message being given to you by your coach. Now watch the games and you'll see. So the next show, I want to see how many times you've noticed this happening. I'm telling you, it is prevalent. It is inexcusable. And I can't believe that coaches allow it to take place.
And that's the kind of insight you're only going to find right here in Warriors 24. We're on Apple Podcasts now. By the way, people can subscribe to us in case you're listening in some other way. Rick, how can people follow you on social media?
Rick 24, Barry, you can check that out. I'm out there doing that and coming up with various different things and probably do a little bit more of it. There's so many other things to talk about the league. Hey, here's what I say, always expect the unexpected. I was talking about Milwaukee doing stuff, and then Milwaukee goes out and loses a game. How do you lose that game after you just come and beat the Rockets in their place with a great come-from-behind victory? That's why I tell you, live by the motto, always expect the unexpected. Look at even the Suns wind up getting a victory. The Suns beat the Clippers.
I know, that was crazy. And that's for a whole other discussion, because we could talk about the Suns and whether or not they're good now. Rick, it's always a pleasure, my man. Thank you.
Yeah, looking forward to it, folks. You guys have a great week. We'll look forward to talking to you next week. God bless you and your families.
Oh, oh.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.